Watch out! It's a fury of T's! I certainly don't know what that means. But I'll tell you what I do know, guys. T-Fury is the original pop culture t-shirt destination, selling unique designs every day since 2008. You can snag their shirts for only 24 hours, starting at midnight. Hey, you! Missing a shirt from the past and want to get it again? Head to the T-Fury Gallery, where you can buy some old designs still in print and vote on others to come back from the dead. You know, I like to say zombie style. Every 2 to 4 weeks, T-Fury adds more designs to their gallery, so be sure to keep an eye out for the return of your favorite shirts. T-Fury shirts cover all your favorite topics and fandoms. They got everything from gaming, sci-fi, anime, TV, movies, pop culture, and more. Their t-shirts change daily, so check back as often as you'd like. Also, feel free to get a life if you're not able to check in that much. I don't think anybody's going to hate you for it. Also, don't forget about the T-Fury After Hours sale. If you miss the day's shirt by only a little, they keep the sale going into the wee hours of the morning just for you. Check out tfury.com/nerdist and see what today's shirt is all about. Guys, that is advertising. Hey guys, welcome to episode 96 of the JV Club. I just inwardly gulped when I said 96 because we're just drawing so close to the 100th episode and I just don't have anything planned at all. Oh no, I'm not supposed to dread it. I'm supposed to celebrate it. Anyway, I'll tell you what I will celebrate is this wonderful podcast chat I just had with Caitlin Gill. She is a San Francisco-based comic. She is a soon-to-be LA-based comic. She is a marvelous writer, and we'll talk about it more on the podcast, but as you'll hear, she's in very high demand among basically all the comedians that are maybe a little bit better known for whatever reason out in the comedy world. People that you love Caitlin, which means that you will also love Caitlin. I thought it was a really great, thoughtful discussion. Hopefully I didn't monopolize it too much. And just an all around great lady. So I invite you in to enjoy her wonderfulness. I'll tell you what else I'll celebrate. You guys. I do have a few shout outs. I'm very behind per usual, but I want to thank Tiana for her wonderful email. She came to one of the shows that I performed in at Sketchfest, the Realest Real Housewives show that I was in with Natasha Leggero and June Raphael and Morgan Walsh and Danielle Schneider. And as I'm saying that, I realize that every single one of those people has done the podcast. So that makes me very happy. And the wonderful Mark Evan Jackson and Nick Thune. That was a blast. But Tiana, thank you so much for your wonderful email. Christopher, a longtime listener of the podcast, I met at the Cal Academy of Sciences when I was doing Jackie Cation's podcast, Dark Forest, which I will be doing Dark Forest again, I think. Just one-on-one with Jackie. I'm very excited about that. And then on the Nerdist page from Maria Thayer, I wanted to thank PJ, I'm Different, Andrew F, Amy, Alex, Scott B, Jenny, PJ, Bronwyn, and Meg. And one of the things that I love about this one is that, who knew that a conversation about apples would be what monopolized the Nerdist comments, but a lot of feelings about apples, very positive ones, a lot of listing of apples. And then also the Smurfs, the Stroomps, and the Schlumpfs were, a hot topic on Nerdist. To answer your question about where I heard about the Smurfs being called the Stroomps, when I was in Paris over Christmas, I was doing this. You know what? I can't even get into it right now. Guys, I'm going to have to stop myself. I'll tell you about it with a guest because it's a much longer story. So sorry to entice you with that and then leave you hanging. I hope nobody loses sleep over this. So anyway, I just wanted to thank everybody. And then Joseph, I wanted to thank you specifically. You always say something that makes me laugh when you send me an email or a comment. And one of the things that he said was that when I say stuff like, when I'm talking to a guest and I've already talked about something on the podcast before, I say, these guys know all about this. And Joseph said that he knows I'm talking about you guys who are listening, but that he likes to imagine that I have like just a huge array of stuffed animals like laying out on the couch or something, and I'm gesturing at them because I'm a crazy person. That's not so far out of the realm of possibility. Anyway, guys, last week of Sketchfest coming up. Anybody who still wants to jump on a plane and come out, I welcome you to do so. I'll be performing on a couple of shows this weekend. Gabe, I hope you make it and your plane actually takes off. If so, I'll see you at the festival. And the rest of you, talk to you next time.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Crawling right up inside it.
I'm inside it. We're in now.
We are in it like when you want, like they we're in it to win it, but we're also in it like Luke Skywalker is inside the innards of that creature.
So much. Yeah, we are. You are in a view. I didn't know when you told me to meet you in this field.
Yeah, this snowy field.
I didn't realize that you had slaughtered one of Golden Gate Park's buffalo and that you were intending on this very cold
that I wanted to nestle into it with you.
To nestle inside of it. I thought it was a weird choice. You'll meet me at 3:30 in the morning at the Buffalo Paddock in Golden Gate Park. But I will say it's warm in here. And the acoustics... our choice.
Aren't they wonderful? I mean, it is super subtle. You might hear some last death rattles.
But, you know, it was pretty much done.
I don't want you to worry about it if you do. Yeah. I don't want you to give it another thought. How rare are buffalo in San Francisco anyway?
Your listeners should be aware that no buffalo were harmed in the making of this podcast.
That's true. Everything that Caitlin's saying is a lie. In fact, we're sitting in my hotel room.
it's morning.
And the buffalo was dead when we found it.
It was. And it really was warm. I mean, so we got there in time.
It was still warm. So it was a fresh death. Why are there buffalo there?
Buffalo.
I know. Major shout out. Why are there buffalo in Golden Gate Park?
I don't know.
Why don't
there's
I know
some kind
that?
Of plaque that I haven't read that
I just rode past
the buffalo
on my bike. I could have just read the plaque. Instead, I was like, someone
but
will tell me this.
I also ride by it on my bike. Yeah. So I was not aware that, I mean, I never stop.
I don't either.
Even for the signs that tell me to. Uh-huh. So correct, I, correct.
Were those jerks that really, make drivers hate bikes?
Yeah, I know. I try to do that. It's the worst when you're riding really early in the morning or really late at night. It's just really hard to stop.
I am ashamed to admit, and I don't like admitting, because I do know that it makes cars hate me. But the problem is that, and maybe I've said this on the podcast before, but I am a jerk no matter what I'm doing. If
right.
I'm in a car,
driver,
I'm a
jerk.
I hate pedestrians and cyclists.
Absolutely.
If I'm in a, right?
Yeah.
It's so easy to convert immediately into the person that's like, that cyclist is going to get killed. I'm going to be the one that kills it. This is terrible.
Yeah.
And then I'm on my bike and I'm like, listen, it feels safer to me to coast through the stop sign because this person is behind me and I feel like they're going to hit me.
They're full of rage.
Yeah. If I don't just like, so it is a weird series of like explaining things to yourself, no matter whether you're on. And then when I'm on foot, I hate cyclists.
Those are dangerous collisions.
I know.
That's a thing. Yeah. I will resolve the buffalo thing by saying I have no idea why they're there. But in the car, I forgive myself. Like, I feel like when I'm a pedestrian, it's legitimately unsafe and my rage is justified. And that is also true when I'm a cyclist because I'm unsafe and it's much faster. Like,
yes.
I'm unsafe faster.
Yeah, it's so, especially in San Francisco. I mean, I guess in LA too, but I stopped riding like on the city streets in LA because I did have a bike accident last year.
Oof.
And it was bad. And sometimes I do flashback to it and I'm so grateful
terrifying.
That there aren't a bunch of cars around me. But up here, yeah, you're really aware of how much of your body is exposed, but like you're just on the road with cars. Like at least when you're a pedestrian, you're on a sidewalk. When you're
on the bike, it's raw up here.
It's
oddly
raw.
I'm more afraid of LA because I feel like the drivers are less aware of cyclists.
I don't disagree with that,
but
I don't disagree
here. It's definitely it's combative. It's getting better the last few years with a bunch of bike lanes. I'm sure
fascinating
listening to anybody who's not in San Francisco.
Yeah, but these guys
but
if
you
love.
Come to visit,
yeah,
it's much more fun to cycle here. There are huge lanes.
Yeah, they really
haven't
have
messed
done.
Up traffic that have definitely improved cycling.
They've
so
done some good stuff. I completely agree. I'm always delighted and surprised, but still scary.
My rage in the car, totally unjustified. I am such a ragey driver, and I feel like I channel all of life's useless anger. I feel like I just let it flow while driving. Like,
I love the expression, all of life's useless anger. It's quite wonderful.
Yeah, it's funny that it came so easily. It felt so natural.
Yeah.
But yeah, I get my eyebrow plucking, my nose picking, and my ambient rage done in the car. I just try to do all of those things there.
You know what? You're not wrong about any of those. And I feel I've witnessed many a person also living that life in the car.
You forget. It's such a visible
It's still very much exposed.
You know, I'm in the car alone. No,
yeah.
you are much with the people of the public when you're in your car, Caitlin.
Yeah,
and they can all see your
picking,
tweezers.
I guess as a woman, I don't begrudge... God, oh, you're so unclassy compared to... I mean, I'm I don't know if you've listened to the podcast before, but mm-hmm. I am always all over the place.
By the way, I am a fan, and indeed, I feel honored to be in the company of your guests.
I'm so proud to welcome you. Thank you very much. So proud to welcome you in. But in terms of meandering all over the place, mm-hmm. I was watching... Come on. I got to just say it. Yes, I was watching Downton Abbey.
You can own that.
You know, I mean, we're all... It's just like, it's not even cool to like it anymore because everyone loves it so much. But, you know, I still watch it. And I was thinking about one of the many... I think I was just observing how the women sit so primly.
Oh.
You're seated in a way that... And, well, I guess you wouldn't even be able to cross your legs. You would need to cross your ankles back in the day.
That's true, yes.
But I usually sit like, you know, a dude.
I have such a wide stance.
In a dress, like in my hotel room, I realize that I'm just sitting like a slob with like, you know, my dress open. Listen, this is, guys, not sexy. but I was thinking about like how much of my attitude I would have to adjust... In terms of how used to like the casualness, men and women of our times, and how incredibly prim they used to be. And then that leads me to the next, like, what are we going, like, if it seems like every generation is shocked when they're aged, when they're elderly, they're all shocked. And you do see this sort of progression of casualness happening. Where I went when I was watching Downton Abbey was like, how far away are we from me being like, I mean, I can't believe that guy just came all over that girl's stomach in the park in front of everyone. You would never be able to do that when I was that age. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
what's left?
I don't.
How much further can it excel?
But I feel like I don't know. There, at some point, there had to be a ramp up to that kind of classiness. Like, I wonder what it was like for the generation that was slovenly, that was shocked in reverse, where it was
That's
like, I can't
point.
Believe these kids in their ruffles.
That's a
like,
good point.
You know, I had rags when I was a kid,
exactly,
and I was happy with those rags. But I don't know. I guess in reverse, I don't know how much more you could stretch an earlobe before I'm going to be shocked by it. And
right?
I'm not sure what act of, I mean, I live in San Francisco. I don't know what kind of act of carnality I could witness in public that I would now be shocked by.
Yeah.
Like, if the world became the Folsom Street Fair, I guess I would be a little bit... rattled. That's a lot of pee you have to walk around in. But I mean, that's just still, I don't know. I don't know, where are we going?
Maybe
we're the generation that's going to do the ramp up.
I was thinking, then I started thinking that,
you
too.
Know,
I was thinking
we
to myself,
the ones
like,
who are gonna,
buttoning
you know,
up a little bit
I'll
more.
I'll be an old lady with a full sleeve of tattoos.
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe you kids. And
you're
clean
so
faces.
You're so like a la Alex
where's your
P.
teardrop
Heaton.
We'll never know how many people you killed.
Exactly.
You know, that's, I can't,
why do you guys
you
keep that to yourselves? I think that's I guess I'm waiting for that / wondering about that too. And also like,
I just hope I get old.
I know, right? I mean, there is also that as we get on our bicycles in traffic. But yeah, I do. And then, but then that feels scary too, because part of me does feel like, I mean, I guess I wouldn't mind if like we ruffled up a little bit. And then I think like, oh no, does that make me like a conservative Republican? Like, am I?
I don't know. As long as, you know, people can still do it to who they want or marry them.
Yeah.
I guess if that's the world, maybe that is what we're heading for. If marriage is the equality we're fighting for, perhaps this is indeed the primming
up you're
looking for.
Maybe it is.
Who knows?
You're right. Because I wouldn't ever enforce, like, I'm not saying I want it to happen. I want it to happen organically. I don't need it. And I, by the way, don't even, but if everything was about to turn into Folsom Street Fair, I guess I would hope for organically more decorum to return before it slipped down that way into
literally
insanity.
It's very slippery.
There's so many bodily fluids. But I wouldn't want it to be a situation where like I'm enforcing that on someone, like with a dress code and this sort of, you just kind of want it to be like the sign of the culture. This sort of going, hey, what if we all wore really uncomfortable clothes? No, I don't want that either.
Yeah, I just hope we move toward a pajama lifestyle. That's kind of what, I mean,
actually,
I hope we
can work toward
that.
Actually, you're not wrong. It's not. I mean, I'm basically wearing pajamas.
Cool,
we're both basically wearing pajamas.
I am absolutely
right now.
I'm wearing fashionable pajamas.
That's the best,
that's what I aim for. I get a lot of, that's my clothing strategy is much more like comfort function and then hope that form follows. Like I
completely agree.
Yeah.
I completely agree. Remind me now, because
yes.
Remind me now, did you, have you, I feel like I've just been at other comedy festivals with you, and I told myself that you had moved out of San Francisco and then back, or did you?
I didn't move back. I've been in LA a lot just because it's so easy and close, but I'm actually relocating. These are my last couple of months in San Francisco, and I technically live in Oakland. Shout out East Bay. But
shout out East, major shout out East Bay.
Yeah, it's time to, I gotta go.
Yeah.
But this has been the best place.
And you are coming down to LA.
Yes, yeah.
LA's San Francisco just loses another luminary.
Well,
another comedy
luminary. I'm not going to be far away, and comedy is kind of my only job right now, and the Bay Area keeps that possible, so yeah. I'll still be here a lot because there's a lot of stage time, and a lot of it has kept me afloat. So
yeah. Side note, I hate to say this because this is just a sad reality, but I told Paul F. Tompkins at one point that he had the most shows at the festival. That is definitely not true.
You had the most shows at the festival.
It was 11 the last time I counted, but I think you got added to something after that. Which means you're in very high demand because these are people. You know, when we give showrunners lists of comedians that are around or that are available and stuff, they have their choice of like a bunch of people from out of town and stuff, and it has no bearing on any of that. It's straight up. Everyone always is like, definitely want Caitlin on the show. And we just, there was a point at which I think we were like, should we tell some people like she's doing too many things? And they're like, no, let's just let her be on everything. It's like the Caitlin Gill Comedy Festival now.
It's been a little crazy. It's been the kind of, I felt, I mean, I'm very tickled by it. Tickle's not even enough. I'm incredibly, like, it's
it feels
ridiculous.
Good to have your peers.
Oh, it's crazy good.
Ask for you by name, right?
Of course. I feel like I've only done a couple of regular sets. They've all been shows that I've been writing for or at. Either like, you know, competitive erotic fan fiction, another amazing podcast, for Porchlight, I wrote, I revamped a story I've used like one other time, which was awesome. An Iron Comic is like my favorite thing to do ever. Iron Comic's just the best. And Speechless, I did last night, where you get a PowerPoint presentation you give.
They asked me if I wanted to do that. I should have.
It was so fun. But doing things like that are, to me, the most entertaining performances. So it's been, I mean, a huge compliment to be added to these shows, and they've been so much fun. So fun.
I do love getting the push to have to create something new.
Yeah. And I know that I am funnier on stage or with a microphone than I am just, you know, kind of personally. So it's very exciting. It's just exciting as a, you know, it recharges some comedy battery in me where I just know to trust myself. It gives me more, it lets me take bigger risks on stage for the rest of the year when I do these kind of shows. You know, it's a great way to start. Sketchfest is always a great way to start the year, but packing it with shows like this is going to be a good foot forward just because I, you know, I'll trust my instincts because I just had to use only instincts on stage for a month.
Keeping those
great
muscles are working.
Yeah.
Well, to speak a little bit to what you just said, to kind of, if I might pry, as this is a very prying podcast, I might as well call this the JV pry.
We are inside of Buffalo.
We are inside of Buffalo. It doesn't get much more intimate than that. But when you talk about that, when you just to call out what you just said about being feeling like you shine on stage, you know, there are some people that obviously we all talk about, like this person's always on or this person has a big personality off stage. And then there are performers who definitely aren't, you know, loud in the crowd, but then get up on stage and kind of find their voice. Is that something that has always been true for you, like as a teenager and...
Yeah, I think it is. I do remember the first laugh I got on stage, and I've been hooked since then. So I know that there's something about that communication between an audience and myself and laughter that feels very natural and feels very comfortable. And I don't get that same buzz from regular conversation, certainly.
Interesting.
So I do appreciate that environment, and it is a place where I find my voice, I suppose, not just my stage voice, but my personal voice definitely is kind of working out how to get that response on stage.
Yeah.
And relating to people in that way makes me feel more successful at relating to people than I do in almost any other context.
What were you like when you were troubled adolescent? I just like to assume everyone was troubled.
You're not wrong about that. Not entirely. I'm was quick-witted, I guess, but also sort of a sad sack and a weirdo. And I had a lot of feelings, and all of my feelings were delicious. I carried another small person on my person at that time. I got hit by a car, lost 100 pounds, and that kind of changed everything.
Whoa, when did that happen?
I was 16.
All right, we got to back this up. I know. Straight away. Where were you a teen?
The timeline, I was a teen in Napa. And I was always kind of a weird kid. And then my parents split and I got weirder.
Brothers, sisters?
No, just me.
Yeah,
which helps
baby.
With the weirdness.
Yep. Ditto.
And, you know, brainy, but socially inept. And then, like, they have better words for that now. And I'm sure one of them would have been applied.
Right.
But I was just, you know, that kid. I skipped kindergarten because I could read, but I repeated third grade because I couldn't divide or talk to people. So those were that's the kind of thing I ran into.
Interesting.
And I kept kind of the weird streak going through high school. And like I said, just sort of ate up all my feelings and kind of topped the scales out. And then had, as the story goes, I went to this, the Bay Area well enough to know BFD, the concert event that Live 105 puts on at the start of the summer. It was like it's a very cool thing if you are a teenager to get to do. So I went to do it, and it was a great concert until after the concert, we went to get Taco Bell, exited the van in the Taco Bell parking lot, piled back into it. There was an extra person. One of us had to sit on the floor. I, of course, shuffled my heavy self back to the van last and sat my sad self down on the floor of the van with like its sliding door open. So my feet were on the ground. And then the van started moving and it just ran over both my legs. It was the. It actually ran over one leg and then stopped on the other one. And my best friend, who was driving, got out of the van, ran around the back of the van to see what had happened. And I looked up at him and I said, my leg is broken. Please move your car. And then he had to get back in the car, move it off of my leg. But they fixed it, you know, they yanked it back in place. And then I was on crutches for like a really long time. And I didn't actually lose a ton of weight right away. I had surgery a year later to repair what hadn't been fixed, and wound up in tough physical therapy after that, and just sort of my mentality also changed at that same time, where I sort of saw my body only in comparison to other people's bodies, and mine never looked like amazing soccer girls, or they never looked like cool cheerleader girls. Like, I just never looked like that, so I just assumed that my body was broken, and then I broke my body. And I was like, oh, I get it. Like, your body's cool because it works.
Yeah.
So I just did stuff with my weird body. It changed my mentality enough where I was just more active naturally, and then physical therapy, and then also Vicodin being an appetite suppressant and eating it. I just lost a whole ton of weight, and I started feeling a lot better about myself. But now I appreciate my aesthetic in a much deeper way. Like, I know I'm a beautiful woman, but I also know I look really funny. And I have to be careful with that because it can be off-putting. This isn't a self-deprecating comment. I have a hilarious body. It's big in the perfect places to be funny. These long, tapery fingers. This little tiny head. Like, there's just ways that I can hold myself to get a laugh. And that's so much fun. I mean, for what I do, and, you know, getting back to where I started this long thing on, the way I fit in naturally on stage, the way how it feels to make people laugh and connect with people, it feels great to use my body that way.
Sure.
So there's the appreciation just for the way I look. I think it's great. You know, everybody wants to, you know, maybe I should jog more, whatever. But it's awesome, too, that I know what's funny about it. And I love using that stuff.
Yeah.
But some of that stuff is a little sensitive. Not everybody's comfortable. I was joking around. It's happened enough that I'm aware not to do it anymore. But there's a sort of a horde of female comedians right now that if you put me in the right outfit, I look like the giant them. And that cracks me up. I love the idea that I could just be Natasha Leggero's Hodor. Like, just follow her around in a fur. Fancy.
She's a small lady.
But I'm the giant. It's so funny that I'm inflated. I'm the enormous blow up doll of her.
Right.
That notion cracks me up. But that's also me saying, like, I look big, you.
Right.
Like,
right.
It's careful line where, like, no, I'm not saying I'm the fat you. I'm saying it's hilarious that I'm giant and you are tiny.
Yeah.
And in a fur, am I puffy?
Right. Always in a fur. Our dear Natasha, always in a fur. Yeah, that's an interesting, those are really tricky, interesting lines on and off stage, right? Is like, it's really hard to marry like self-confidence with an awareness of other people's perceptions of how we look.
Yes.
With being a woman, because that's, it's so, it's still not, it's like, it feels so different for a guy to make fun of his weight than it does for a woman.
So much.
Even if they could say the exact same thing with the exact same tone, the exact same intent, people are, because our society's so fucked up and because we're so weight conscious and like, is it, you know, like, is it still PC to laugh about being fat versus, like, you can't laugh about being gay? Anyway, you get this sort of, like, whatever the temperature is in terms of what's okay.
Yep.
All of that stuff is still very much, like, it's just very textured. And it's hard to know, like, even trusting my own instincts. Like, how much of this am I owning or am I pretending to own? Like, which clearly I feel like you do, and you're having those conversations with the audience as well, and like sort of understanding the relationship as a comedian too, where they're participating back at you. It's not just you recording a video and putting it up on YouTube talking about your body. It's like in the moment you're getting a sense of what people are willing to accept or not accept about that too, which I
and
think
what
is
they
so
see and what they don't see.
Mm-hmm.
And understanding all that, I mean, I would say the first 5 years of me doing comedy was all about trying to figure out what they see when they look at me. Because again, I understand people better on the stage than I do off. I don't always pick up what people see about me first or last or what their impression is.
Yeah.
But you definitely feel that when you're on stage, and learning how to navigate that, explore it, and then kind of write in it and perform in it has been incredible. Just
well, that's,
in
that's
life,
what Arden was
been
saying
amazing.
Too. I'm so fascinated by
she's the best
female comedian.
She's another
too,
one I would like to
vote
her for.
Yeah.
I would totally just throw me in a wig and I could follow her around with fancy water.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Fantastic.
She cracks me up.
That she's amazing. But yeah,
she's
she was
amazing.
Talking about the too. I can't remember if she was talking about it on the podcast or if we were just talking about it when we were hanging out, but that idea of like finding out how people are going, what they're going to accept out of your mouth and what somebody else might see, be able to get away with or whatever, and sort of understanding, and that that's this constant checking in with your identity in a way that those of us who, I just get excited about, especially stand up. I get excited about why to me this podcast makes sense is just that the sort of microcosm version of like, we're all on stage all the time in society and in our peer groups and when we meet strangers. But like, you have chosen something that takes that to this completely other level. That's just a very larger than life version.
The craziest extreme of it too.
The older
version. Like, we wrote a play. It's not like we learned to play the guitar, although maybe you play guitar, but we it's just us, you know, it's only the microphone and the audience and that's it.
Yeah.
So we really want, we must be thirsty for that kind of filterless look at what people see.
Yeah. But I'm not, like, cause I can't do stand up.
Oh,
I can't, like, I don't,
but you're such a natural, you're a performer just so naturally.
Well, thank you, I guess, but like, but to me, that the
and I'm sure
the tipping
took work.
Point.
I'm not saying like this. You didn't even do anything for that.
Yeah. But no, but like, I'm very lazy. You know, stand up seems so hard to me in comparison to just going and like doing improv or whatever, because it is like, I can rely on all these people who are all funnier than me, and they'll make me look funny, and I don't have to, you know, whatever I'm exposing about myself may or may not be true. Like, improv is great because you can sort of, I think my friend Jessica Makinson, who's in theme park this weekend with me, is really good. She's on the podcast, is really good at that with me too, which is like, we love pulling up real issues that we've even had over the course of that day. If something happened that we both understand happened, not between us, but just like, you know, those moments during the day where you're like, oh, that kind of hurt my feelings when that guy said that to me. We will fully bring that up organically on stage, but like, nobody ever knows that it's based in reality. It could just be a scene out of nowhere that's meaningless. Yeah. And that's just different than, you know, the really great comedy that I enjoy most, which is like pulling from personal experience and like the humanity of it all. I don't know. So, okay, so you got hit by a car.
Humanity.
The car that you were in.
Uh-huh. Yes, I got hit by the car I was in. Correct.
self-contained accident. Yeah. So, and but I do want to go back to what you said about understanding your body differently, because I do think that that's so precious and important for us all to bear in mind. And I don't mean that in like a chidey mom way, but I think that checking in with the fact that, you know, like, okay, well, today my butt feels really big because I was eating my feelings. And, you know, yeah. I think men and women all go through that. Either that, or you're drinking your feelings, or you're mm-hmm. having sex with somebody you don't know your feelings, mm-hmm. or you're smoking your feelings, or whatever.
I've never done any of those things. Sorry.
yeah, we have so many options.
I'm fucking a bag of kettle chips that's behind your head right now. I see you barbecue. I'm just kidding. I don't want those.
Those are so delicious.
There is a bag of pet kettle chips.
There definitely are.
And you can feel my eyes.
Yeah, girl, it's blushing. It's blushing. but like, yeah, just to sort of, I mean, I hate to say it, it's a super like preachy kind of children are starving in Africa that your mom would say to you version of, but it's kind of real thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like when you kind of take a step and go, yeah, but like I'm walking.
Yeah.
And my big butt is walking me to this store
exactly.
that I can do that, you know? And that's kind of a, I don't know, like why not take that for granted? There's no loss in appreciating that.
Oh, and so much to gain in appreciating it. And I think I do get down on myself about my body. I've gained a bunch of weight in the last year, so it's a current issue that I notice it. I feel it in places.
Yeah.
But I also know that all I have to do is be active a little bit for a little while for my perspective to get tilted back to the right place where I'm just so thankful that it's capable still.
Sure.
And all I want to do is improve its capabilities. And if I try to work out thinking I want my butt to get smaller, I will be miserable and yes. I will stop.
Yes.
But if I do keep my perspective on just being impressed that my body can do stuff, I will try harder and I will do more. And it's so dumb that it's that simple, but it is that simple. And positive feedback loops are something that I'm really trying to spend more time in, because I've been so good at the negative feedback loops that the positive ones take more work, but they're still loops. And once you're in them, you're in them.
I agree.
And I think if I keep my head on right, I don't even notice that I lose a ton of weight. I also am 6'1", and just sort of, I have wide set hips. I'm never going to be like that small. I'm not looking to be,
right.
But my body will change without me noticing. I can gain and lose 20 pounds in a month without me taking stock of that.
Yeah.
But I do notice when it's easier for me to run upstairs, whether I'm 20 pounds heavier than I was last month or not.
Sure.
So as long as I keep my head on capability, I don't care I don't care where the numbers are.
Yeah.
And you can see it in my face, you know, that how you hold yourself determines what you look like.
Absolutely.
And if I took a jog today, I would hold myself on stage like I looked like $1 million. Even though my weight doesn't change, one workout doesn't change your
weight. That's such a great point.
It changes the way you hold your face, you know?
That's such a great point. I love what you said about the whole positive loop idea. Like I think a lot of us focus on our body image based on punishment.
Yeah.
And so it does become sort of like, you are going to run up these stairs because you are a fat ass.
Yeah.
Instead of like, you know what? I'm going to go for a bike ride because it's going to feel really good to go for a bike ride.
Yeah.
And I'm going to feel better. And also, like, if I don't go for a bike ride, you know what? This is the best I can do right now.
Yeah.
For whatever place I'm in, whatever that means, whatever's going on, that I've gained the weight or I've lost the weight, I just need to tell myself, like, I'm doing the best I can. You know, if I'm eating more or if I'm eating my feelings more, and I'm aware of it and I'm having the conversation with myself that's gentler than, you know, What are you doing?
Fuck yeah!
If it's more just like, you know what, Janet, you're doing. Look at all these other things you've got going on in your life. Yes. Like, no surprise. Hey, big surprise. Big surprise that you're letting this happen. And to your point, like, you can also make it unhappen. You can do the other thing, and then you can, you know, and maybe something else slips because you're, you know, making sure that you take that hour a day to get your exercise. But then maybe this other thing, it's not perfect right now. But like, you're doing the best you can. We're all, if we just kind of take it easier on ourselves and go, hey, you're doing the best you can.
Yeah.
Like, we're not, you shouldn't be in a relationship so that you have someone to tell you that. We should just be in the relationship with ourselves that we tell ourselves that. Like, the whole self-parenting thing is just becoming, is like broadening and becoming more and more clear to me as I get older. Like, I have a thyroid condition. I have to get blood tests. I hate getting my blood drawn. For me, it used to be a panic attack trigger because I had one terrible experience where someone hit the wrong thing and my vial filled up with blood and they were like, they freaked out. So I freaked out. Yeah. So there's, you have to sort of like tamp that down every time. But it does become that kind of like, it's such a silly thing to have to say to yourself in your own brain or even out loud. But that recognition of like, boy, nobody else is going to make me do this.
Right. Yeah.
I do not have a parent standing next to me driving me to the doctor's office. I gotta do it myself.
And you have to be able to hold your own hand through that kind of stuff. You have to give yourself that kind of power. That's a positive feedback loop right there. Cause the one time you do go to your doctor's office and make it, it's easier the next time. And when you panic, you know, maybe it's hard down the road, harder than it should be, but you remember getting through it and you just kind of are able to, that one foot in front of the other factor. Mm-hmm. And parenting, the self-parenting thing is interesting. I think I still fight with that because I have a childish resistance to any kind of parenting, coupled with a nice bouquet of abandonment issues. Mm. So I want it and I hate it. So I resist it from myself in that same way where I beat myself up for not making myself do things, but I also want to fuck the man even if I'm the man. You know?
Totally.
Which doesn't help.
I think that might be an only child thing.
That could,
especially since your parents split too, like you. So like me, you had no siblings around.
No.
You have no, because I was just talking about this with someone. I was like, I think, and you can tell me if you have this experience too, I think I'm hyper aware of how I'm coming off with someone that I spend a lot of time with, just simply because I just didn't. I mean, of course you have friends and stuff when you're younger. I mean, some of us do, some of us don't. I had periods of time where I didn't have as many, and periods of time when I did, where I had someone I could spend every day after school with, but other times when I didn't. And that sense of like when you're an only child and your parents aren't around that much, I feel like you really don't have that other person reflecting you back to you in the way like a sibling would or something like that. And so I think I overthink stuff where like a friend will be like if I traveled with a girlfriend, which I did for a couple of weeks, I think I got like halfway through, I got real worried about how she was doing and how she was doing with me. Like, am I being okay? Am I being selfish? Is it okay that I didn't want to do that thing? And she was like, why are you so worried about this? And I really had that point of reckoning where I was like, you know what? I think it's because I'm so afraid that I'm self-absorbed as an only child that I like fall over myself not to be, but like somehow you're still being narcissistic because you're still preoccupied with how am I coming off right now? Am I being a good friend? Am I offering enough generosity? Exactly. They must be spending all their time thinking about whether or not I'm being friendly enough or if I need more time alone or they need more time alone. So it's weird because it's almost this like, it's a sort of reactive codependence that it can only come out of like just being in a foreign world in a way. Like, how do I fit into this two-person dynamic since I never had one?
Man,
does that resonate for you?
Yes, it does. In friendships and in relationships both, that you hit this wall of self-awareness where it was not present at all and suddenly it's the only thing present in the room where it does. I guess I have to kind of climb that mountain and then I know we're the real kind of friend. Like if I can get through that moment with somebody where I become aware that they are aware of me. And I forget that you can't miss me in a room. Like I have a presence and I'm also I don't know, acquired taste is too strong, but I have a taste, you know, right, and you know, it's not easy to, or it's not hard to acquire,
right?
But it's, I'm, you know, I forget how in a room I am when I'm there.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
suddenly I'm terribly aware of it. and that's when I lose control of it. Because I'm, you know, it's fun and easy to be around me unless I'm aware that you're around me. And then I'm just a panicked animal. Right. And I don't know what to do about it. In a relationship, I'm just starting to get those... I'm just starting to really feel that more. I am in a newish relationship, but it's a good one, and it's like, you know, happening.
Yeah,
and it's cool because I'm one of the greatest assets is that I don't feel self aware in it, and I haven't hit that yet, but I'm still afraid of it.
Yeah.
So who knows? Who knows?
Oh, it's so interesting. It's so interesting. So okay. So what were you when you? I mean, obviously, we know that you enjoyed going to that concert.
What were you like
on a more sort of superficial level in terms of like what your interests were in that way? When I guess before and after the accident. I mean, when you had all that recuperating time, was there sort of identity stuff going on there where you were like, how do I fill the time differently since I can't.
I had already found both marijuana and television. So I that's filling time. Not a challenge. I mean, this is pre Netflix. So yeah, I'm like, oh, gee, with this shit. But, I was too smart and too sensitive. And those aren't compliments. Too smart is not that hard to do. And it doesn't mean that you're good at stuff. But it means that
our brains are firing
out how
too
to
many
cut corners. Yeah, exactly. I figured
completely
out panic
relate.
Attacks real young.
Oh my
that
God,
kind of
you
thing.
And me, baby.
I was smart enough to do things well, but not I was not wise enough to have any context for anything. Like my first panic attack was about those CBEST tests. I was like 7. Do you remember those bubble tests you took?
Oh, sure,
that, like,
sure. Like,
your school,
I think ours was
something.
The Iowa test. Iowa test.
Everybody takes them somehow. Yeah. It's year 7-ish, first or second grade, and you fill up bubbles on a sheet, yeah. and they measure some percentile.
Exactly.
I had like a hyperventilating panic attack over how well I was supposed to do in those.
Yeah.
Which is a smart kid, because I was going to score in the 90s,
yeah.
but I'm an idiot for not realizing that that shit doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, no ability to see kind of very, I am either a forest for the forest, or I'm looking at one tree. Like, that's it. Like, it's not forest. Trees, plural, aren't in my forest.
Yeah.
It's kind of all I got.
Yeah.
So I was a little too serious. Always funny, because I always see the tragedy in things. Mm. So it's pretty easy for me to joke about stuff. There's that natural relationship.
Sure.
But I have a real killjoy gene. That just somewhere in my body, this gene expresses itself where I don't let fun things be fun. Like, professional sports are terrible because of concussions and rapists. And, like, yep. I can't like movies because of starving children who don't eat while we spend billions of dollars so that robots can fight robots. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
I think about the starving kids while I'm watching Transformers instead of just enjoying the summer blockbuster and Shia saying, go, 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 go. Like,
no, go.
I just miss. Something shortcuts.
Well, no wonder marijuana and television, obviously television being still a thing that you can accidentally spin out on you're thinking. But sort of numbing that voice is so loud. And I completely relate to that too.
Yeah. So I think when I was a kid, I was a little bit over serious and still funny, still, but sensitive.
Anxious.
Yeah.
And then this terrible thing that did happen to you.
Yeah. And I still have all those traits, but I wouldn't take that back. I mean, that was an important event to sort of get me back on a better track in terms of taking care of myself,
mm-hmm.
Or just being good to myself in any way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I didn't you don't realize how weird situations are until you're out of them. But like, my mom went to seminary and then moved to Mexico and was there for like 10 years from like 12 to 22.
Bye, mom.
And she did so many amazing things. Like, there's more children named Jill than, you know, any other person I know. Like, she has more kids named after her. More people have come out to my mother than any other person on the planet. Like, she's held the hands of the dying, like babies and old people. She's like nursed people through. She was like a chaplain. So like, literally did that. She's done amazing things. And also, I see her like once a year. So
yeah.
it's, there's the... there's this weird loop I get into where, of course, that's really hard and I have difficult feelings about that, but I'm not allowed to have those feelings because she is doing amazing things.
I feel like that's really common among people who very much devote their lives to charity. I think, not to make you less special, but like,
frankly,
for sure,
or art or business.
Yeah,
or,
for sure. There's, you know, just heaps and heaps of examples of people that we as a culture all esteem so much, and then you hear these stories from their parents or from their children that are like, yeah, I never really you know, like John Lennon, let's just use him as an example.
Sure.
Everyone's like, oh my god, listen to his lyrics, clearly he was the best human being in the world. And then you have Julian Lennon saying, dad who?
Yeah,
you know. And it really is, it's so interesting to see how the kind of little, the most intimate, and I mean, is that a conversation you've ever had with her where she feels she has that sense of awareness of like, wow, I really put all of that motherly energy outside of my own daughter.
Our whole family is intense and difficult, and my childhood with any hardships doesn't hold a candle to what she had to deal with. So there was, I know I had it pretty darn good, but I also know I had to work through some stuff, and it kind of in my mid 20s it really started to roil.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to her about doing some therapy. I wound up going to a therapist we were familiar with down here. She lives in Washington State. And then she came down for one session. And I mean, this is something that you get in a concentrated relationship. We were able to hash a lot of shit out in an hour. And I just got in the touch with this idea that, like, as difficult as it was for me to be away, or for me to have her be away, it was impossible for her. Like, that is a well of hurt that she can't even dip into. It's so deep. Like, if she falls in that hole, you don't climb out of that. That's so hard. That was the hardest thing for her.
Yeah.
So it made me appreciate that we both struggle with it, so I could be a little bit, I forget that.
That's a really good point.
And the self-parenting thing kind of dawned on me. I'm not going to get that. I'm not going to be 12 and have mommy there. I'm not going to be 14 and have mommy there, or 16 or 18.
Did your dad remarry? I don't need to stay locked
in 16 or 18. I have a great stepmom. She's awesome. Yeah. But a stepmom is a different family member.
Different.
Equal. I have three parents in there. It's like three legs on the stool.
Yes.
But your mom and your stepmom are two different characters
absolutely.
In your life.
One does not take the place of the other. That absolutely makes
which
sense.
Which is a credit to them both. But I was able to let go of that idea that I was going to get that back. And now I try to self-parent for the things that I was sort of, you know, I would sort of self-sabotage by waiting for a parent to notice something. But like, my dad is a like giant marshmallow puff. He's like, if I was in jail, my dad would be bragging about how many felonies put me behind him. It's like, that's the kind of dad. So he's not going to do it.
Yeah.
And mom's just not going to see it because she's not going to be there.
Yeah.
So I started to self-parent through some of the shit that I just ignored as an adult. And that's kind of where I'm at. That's what the 30s are all about for me. Anyway, I'm 32, is just kind of getting things in track on my own terms and not expecting that of either parent, which has allowed this relationship with the two of them to really flourish.
I think it is very freeing. I agree with you.
It's great.
Not to just, you know, I guess I'm obviously into
it. I don't need a parent like a 12-year-old does. It's a lot easier to enjoy her.
And that's obviously, that's different than people who have, you know, for those of you guys listening who have like real conflicts with your parents, that's different. And so we all kind of have to take it from where we are. And I think I spent a lot of time being very Pollyanna about stuff, and you know, just having talked to Maria Thayer about like you know, people that you've been in past relationships with and how much better it feels to just hold on to whatever it was that was great about that, because it just feels less poisonous. But ditto with parents is just kind of like, like, the older I get and the closer I get to the age that they were as I watched them be parents, all those cliches are true for my young listeners. Just going to have to deal with that shit. Sorry. But as close as I feel to a teenager, I also have this experience of, like, feeling this. I think when you work kind of through your stuff with your folks, not necessarily even side by side with them, but on your own, as you kind of think about what your upbringing was like and stuff, and nobody has to, you know, I'm not saying you have to live in the place where you just constantly talk about what happened when you were five. Nobody's saying that. I think some of it just comes without even trying as you get older. But like, I feel such, and I love both my parents, and I have had a very good relationship with them, even though whatever my broken junk is what it is. To feel the tenderness of when you get to the age where you're like, oh my God, like there's the age where your parents do everything right. There's the age where your parents do everything wrong. There's the age where you can't figure out if it was your fault or theirs. And then there's the age where you're like, oh my God, we're all just some people trying to fucking get it done. Like, ugh, we're just trying to do the best we can. Like, bless their hearts. Like, I have no room to be angry at my mom about how she was after my parents' divorce. I got no room for that anymore because God love her for just making it through and like not shattering into a million pieces to where she couldn't be put back together again. Not taking her own life. Ditto my dad. Like, we were making the tour. We're able to stay on this earth and, like, love each other. And that the tenderness of that is just, like, such a great place to arrive at where you're like, oh, my God. So even if, you know, your parents do things, I've got a letter from an email from a listener whom I've corresponded with a little bit, who's just, you know, she's a teenager and she's trapped in a house where her parents are still married and they are just at each other's throats all the time. And it's so hard when you're, you know, 15 years old to feel like you're a year away from being able to drive. You just don't have any freedom and you're, she feels trapped as anyone would. And it's so hard to hear about that happening and to want to say, like, I know this is not going to help you right now, but like they are just people that are fragile and hurting and they're not doing a great job right now. But at some point, hopefully you'll be able to just feel so sorry for them that they're doing such a crappy job now. Like what you'll feel is like sympathy and empathy. And you'll just be like, God, they really couldn't get it together. And yes, it did affect me, but like, they're just people who are broken.
It's finding that it, of course, broken is terrifying, but it's also sort of beautiful. And if you can remember, I mean, speaking specifically to this one listener, like, they're your parents. You popped out of their body. They love you no matter how broken they are. And if you can find a place that's safe for you, you don't ever lose their love, and you have to keep yourself emotionally, you know, safe and together. They're tough years that you're in the middle of too.
Yeah.
You know, if you're 15 and 16,
absolutely.
It's just the hardest.
I know it's the hardest,
I feel like there's the world, is smaller and bigger at the same time. And there are so many escapes that you can find that are better ideas than, I feel like I was lucky. And if I chose 10 things to escape with, only two of them were drugs, you know?
That's a really good point.
There's so many things to escape in that aren't, harmful.
Yeah.
And are, and hopefully, you know, wonderful. And for me, thinking about specifically that age, I'm 32 now and my 20s were wasted on me. If I could take a snapshot of 32-year-old Caitlin's life and show it to 16-year-old Caitlin, like, I fantasize that about that too much.
Connecting with that younger person.
So I really hope that that's, I mean, don't worry. It does get better. Fucking
Definitely does get better. I would have to agree with that. I'm glad that you had a good stepmom. That's cool.
Yeah.
That does definitely help.
They're awesome all the way around.
Yeah. Okay. So you enjoyed marijuana and television. What did you just love watching? Like, was it sort of an everything across the board, or did you have stuff that really spoke to you?
I don't think you'd be surprised by this list. I realized that I rewatch things too much and I'm unaware of a lot of cool things that are happening, like, in entertainment right now.
Oh,
like,
because you revisit the old classics?
Yes. Like, I have not seen any of Girls, but I have seen the entirety of the Kids in the Hall catalog in the calendar year 2014.
I mean, you are talking to someone right now who's going to encourage that kind of behavior.
Exactly.
There's no question.
I know that I'm only inviting an enabler in here.
But, yeah, very much so.
I do stuff like Kids in the Hall, Mystery Science Theater 3000 are the things that I rewatch and rewatch and rewatch and never stop rewatching. And then weird influences that are older. Like, I'll never stop watching Murphy Brown. I'll never stop watching and loving. Even though it's perfectly dated, it didn't age. It aged
preposterously.
Just right. But yeah, I just kind of get stuck. But then I find new stuff I love, and I rewatch The Living Daylights out of that, like every Archer. Of course, I'm like a huge Adult Swim fan, and I like, you know, kind of the brainy, weird animation that's been happening in the last like 15 years.
Do you feel like some of the stuff that you come back to over and over again, is it kind of like... You know, because when you're, I'm always so interested in the way little kids can watch, you know, what they figured out, like, what is that? It's either The Tipping Point or Blink. It's one of those two Malcolm Gladwell books where they talk about the Children's Television Workshop versus like Blue's Clues versus like a thing where somewhere along the line, someone figured out that like children of a certain age actually want to watch the same episode 5 days a week.
Yeah.
That you don't have to have five different episodes 5 days a week, which to me sounds like such a drag. But then you think about like even when you were little, or you know, when I babysat, or just my friends' children's, how much they just want to they be in a loop about something, and that's part of the learning process. But then for me now, the stuff that I can come back to time and again really is like seeing old friends. Like, it does become, especially if you're a television generation kid, or you were alone a lot like I was, that it does become like, I just need to like see my friends Murphy, and like, you know what I mean? I think that for the West Wing, that's true for me, or the Sex and the City even, where I can sort of like put something like that on, and it's like eating soup when you're sick, kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. Kids in the Hall is definitely a warm blanket.
Yeah.
And it, for something like Mystery Science, like, that's my background noise. It's a conversation that's happening behind me. Like, you know, if it's on, I'm doing some 10 other things.
Right.
But I can tune in anytime. It's going to be hilarious. And I know those voices. It's like comfortable. It's like hearing somebody, if I'm in, quote unquote, my office, it's like hearing something in the living room that's like warm and funny.
Yeah.
And they're the perfect length to get a million other things done. You just put it on, and 2 hours later, you know, hopefully you finished what you started.
But right.
Somebody was chattering in your, you know, metaphorical living room the whole time.
I totally get it. I'm going to look at these texts just to make sure there's nothing that is an emergency. I don't think there is. I want to play some MASH with you. Gotta do that.
That's right.
Gotta get into some MASH. Let me think about this right now. Okay. Category one. I'm going to dive right into it. Television series that you can go into and be in an imaginary way.
In an imaginary way?
Yeah, like you suddenly can drop in and be one, like you can hang out with the robots on Mystery Science. Or
I mean, I feel like it's, I just want to be Archer's Pam.
Right. Great. And then I need two more.
I feel like I could I'll go with Satellite Love. I'll go up with Mike and Joel and the bots. And how about we'll go with I don't want to say how about Masters of Sex?
Oh, great. So that is a new one. You're enjoying that.
It's pretty good. Yeah, I
like it. I enjoy it too. Yeah. I think it's really good.
It's really good.
Ah, they're all so great. I remember I will say, oh, that's a good one too. You want to switch out one?
I know the series better. So yeah, sure. Let's go with Orange. Okay. Oh, Orange instead of Masters.
Masters, got it. I can now say that it's come out that right when I podcast Lizzie Kaplan, and she had just started shooting, and I didn't know anything about the series or anything at all. But when we left, I'm sure she wouldn't mind me saying this, she was like, well, I got to get ready to get eaten out tomorrow. I was like, I don't know what you're talking about, but I cannot wait to find out. Fond memory. And then I saw the show and I was like, oh, yes, indeed. I certainly understand what she was talking about.
Indeed.
Okay, how about three places that you would like, three places in the world that you would like to go bicycle riding?
To go bicycle riding?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Sure. How about we'll go with ride a bike down that ridiculous Verrucht water slide.
Oh!
How about ride a bike, let's see, in the world, huh?
Anywhere in the world.
Anywhere. in the world. Let's go. We'll do one generic answer with anywhere in New Zealand.
Yes, good answer.
Seriously, come on.
Having been, I can New Zealand.
It's amazing.
100%, right? Yes.
God damn it.
Oh, so great.
And then on any wire that French dude who makes movies.
Yeah!
Man on the Wire. I'll ride my bike on one of the Man on the Wire wires.
Man on Wire wires. Wonderful answers. Okay. I'm going to have to go with this because I feel that you are clearly, we've discussed, fellow lover of delicious foods. Three foods that you can scientifically convert into being super healthy. So not only do they not have any ramifications, positive or negative, it's actually like eating broccoli.
Oh my God. Carbonara. Pasta great. Carbonara.
Great.
I would absolutely. Yeah, that'd be great. How about we'll go with bread pudding, sweet or savory?
Ooh.
And then,
British of you.
Right? I mean, I'm a Scot and
yeah.
So
no, I love bread.
I don't
enjoy
even think science could make
too.
That food delicious or good for you. And then how about Five Guys burgers?
I've never had a Five Guys burger. Where are they?
My dream.
Where are they?
They're kind of everywhere these days.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
In San Francisco or everywhere.
There is one in Alameda, and there is one. Oh God, on the 80. I feel like Pinole or something.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Who are these Five Guys?
They're Five Guys, uh-huh. I presume.
Be weird if there were four guys.
It's just burgers, but and they don't. It's the menu is just burgers. And fries for mm-hmm. those burgers,
mm-hmm.
But they have a long list of stuff that you can throw on there, and you can just have all the things.
Yeah,
so they don't do some fancy like that's our cowboy
okay,
western
so,
burger
okay,
with the onion
so
rings.
You're not
and the
getting like
stuff.
The Monterey.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
Just, it's
you
like
just
a build your own sandwich
on your
more,
exactly,
but with a burger.
But with burgers,
yeah, that's good.
And their fries are great.
Yeah, that sounds great.
And it's always too much. It's always wonderful.
Oh, that
they have peanuts.
Delicious.
They just have peanuts there. For you to eat, throw
in
shells,
a shell?
Wherever.
Yeah,
yeah, peanuts
I gotta
on the
tell
shell.
You,
I you don't like
was
that?
Just no. I was just okay. talking about that with someone. I said, "Is there anything better than a bag of peanuts,
right?
In a shell? I love it all.
Yeah,
I don't even mind when you get a little bit of the shell in your mouth and you're like, it's salty and you're like, I know I can't swallow this, but like, I'm
okay
with it.
I'm okay with it.
100% agree. Okay, great. How about three books that in fact you wrote instead of who we thought wrote it?
Oh sure, okay. Let's go with no, Caitlin, don't say Mein Kampf. Nobody thinks Hitler jokes are funny, Caitlin. Nobody thinks that. Nobody at all. Also, The Color Purple is a very inappropriate choice, Caitlin. Get your head in the game.
This is a wonderful what not to do.
How about we'll go with Guns, Germs, and Steel. Let's just go ahead and assert that I had the original theory of how everything developed.
Wait, everywhere. What did you say?
Jared Diamond's Guns, Germs, and Steel. Any college student listening probably has it on their shelf.
I'm sad to say, not only did I not read it in college, but
it is an incredibly poorly edited, but excellently, it's well conceived, poorly edited, in my opinion. But it's sort of a cool idea about how knowledge was distributed around the world, how things wound up the way they are now, where biology meets history. And
this sounds like something I should
where science
know more
meets
about.
Politics. It's a good one. And again, in my opinion, not a real page turner, but definitely the thesis is very compelling and cool to think about.
Okay. All right.
So
and you wrote it.
Go there.
Possibly.
I wrote that. It's just
we'll
a thing.
See. We'll
it's just
see.
A thing. Let's go with Blubber. Let's go with I also wrote Blubber.
That Judy Blume?
Yeah, that's Judy. Well, I mean, it was me.
Well, good old JB, yeah.
But I ghost, right?
Right. You did her a big service on that one.
You know, it's the least I could do.
Yeah.
And how about, this is harder than it should be. I want to go classic literature somehow.
Sure.
Let's go with the Christmas. No, the orphany one? I was going to say Oliver Twist, but clearly I haven't read that, so I feel like that I couldn't.
What
I
other one?
I have
like
to have read
Great
it.
Expectations type.
Yeah,
thing?
Great Expectations
That's
is the
a
one
good
I wanted.
One. That's a good one. Marvelous. Marvelous. Okay, I'm going to jump into crushes.
Sure.
Can represent any arc of your life, but three people that you would enjoy maybe, you know, going on a date with or spending your life with, this imaginary world, or having sex with, or anything in between.
Well, I am dating a lady. It's the first lady I've ever dated. She's great. And I feel like on the long list of lesbian activities we do that are gayer than gay sex, one of them would definitely be including her name in a MASH list where I could have anybody in any world, real or not.
Quite wonderful.
That's so gay, though.
That's so sweet.
So gay, though.
It's so sweet.
But yeah, we'll throw one Kelly on there.
Okay.
We'll just put a Kelly on there.
Great. Great.
Because again, that's the other thing. We look at every dog. We look at all of the dogs.
That's so great.
We look at every dog. We gush over every dog.
I love it.
We name every dog.
I love it.
Mentally dress every dog. Not undress. We dress in those dogs. Let's see. Fantasy crushes. These ones I should be far more prepared for.
It's super okay not to be.
Oh my God, though. Let's get political with it.
Ooh. Rush Limbaugh.
I mean, I was gonna
maybe
say,
I misunderstood who you are. It's possible I was wrong about who you are.
How about Noam Chomsky? Mm. I just want him to talk to me, and then I want to blow his mind.
Great.
And then one more of those.
One more of those.
Let's just get hunky, though.
Anybody? Yeah, get hunky with it.
Because why not? Who do I just straight up want to mount? I'm trying to think. I always forget. Who's super tall?
Oh, yeah.
One gangly giant.
Nice gangly giant. Conan O'Brien.
Gangly giant.
God, it was amazing meeting Conan and being wearing like 3-inch heels where I'm now 6'2", and being like, oh, he's definitely. Oh, great one. Great one. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Three fictional best friends. Could be mother figure, father figure, just a buddy figure, from anything. From it could be, you know, Archer. It could be
sure.
Mary Poppins. It could be Jesus.
could it be Jesus though? Could it?
Probably not.
Okay, let's go with. Oh man, who do I super want to cook? All of the Powerpuff Girls.
Great.
How about
Have you watched My Little Pony?
Not the new one.
Yeah, me neither.
I remember. I vaguely remember the old one.
Yeah, I feel like I have a sense of why the whole Brony thing is a thing. And I tried to watch that documentary on Bronies, and I unfortunately the clips that they show from the show, I still don't get it. Like they don't show. I don't think they do a good job of showing whatever it is that's like drawing people in that are, you know, college age and older young men. Because I walked away from half the documentary, A, not interested in finishing it, but B, going like, I totally respect it. I still don't get it.
I don't get it.
Like, it didn't unlock anything for me.
Don't know. I mean, community? Everybody's searching for that top of Maslow's hierarchy?
Yeah.
Acceptance?
Sure.
Maybe that's the only motivation we need? I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know.
Okay, Powerpuff Girls.
Other real or fictional people that would be my best friends.
Yeah.
Shit. This I just at the top of the show. I love the things that where I have to think. I'd be under pressure. I'm so good at that. That's really
yeah,
where
but
I
you're
shine.
Not really on stage.
Yeah. That's. But
if I had brought
there's
in a group
microphone,
of people,
yeah. I probably would have been acing this. But how much of this in the podcast? Can you just layer this noise over everything?
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Just a constant drone.
I think to me, it always feels
decision.
Longer to the person that's having the problem making a decision. But at this point, everyone has taken so long with MASH. I like to think this is the time where like somebody like quickly answers an email at work.
Oh, yeah.
Or
perfect.
They go pee,
yeah.
But they still are listening because they're
yeah,
like, it's okay. I don't have to give it my
fine.
Full
I
focus. They can
to,
multitask.
Because
right now, your thinking is like the comforting sound of Mystery Science Theater 3000 in the background.
Oh,
of these
only
lives.
I could provide that service.
Yeah,
that's the that's like the most. That's the highest thing that I could aspire to.
Yeah.
But other best friends that I Murphy Brown.
Great. Great.
Duh. Of course, Murphs.
Of course.
And then maybe oh man, who do I? Oh fucking get Eleanor Roosevelt, dude.
There you go. There you go. She was there all along. You just didn't realize it.
So I have a cat. Her name is Eleanor. I'm getting a tattoo of that cat posed as the Eleanor Roosevelt Monument, dressed in a signature Caitlin outfit.
Perfection.
I'm super excited about it. That's everything.
It's everything all put together. That's everything all put together.
That's how I'm.
Where on your body is that going?
It's going to be the forum, which is a bold choice. But I am. I'm not taking the choice lightly, and I'm going to an accomplished artist. So hopefully it'll be a stunning piece, easily covered by any nude sleeve casting agents listening.
Sure.
So.
Sure. That and like, I've really just decided that I fully embrace tattoos. I mean, I myself have one removed, so I really shouldn't say because now I don't have any at all. But I was just thinking about, like, in terms of us just talking about the primming of our future, and how people are like, listen, we're all going to look like such idiots walking around with our loose skin covered in tattoos. I was like, I have really no problem with that at all. Like, I really don't. Tattoos, I just think are great. Like, I don't have any.
I'm so in. Who can't?
Like, I think it's great. I think it's great.
I'm kind of
excited. Yeah. And yeah.
Yeah. It's for me. It's, I got one at 20, one at 30, another one later. Like, I have a few and there were timestamps. And I'm so glad I know that person that was that person.
Absolutely.
Then. I travel pretty light. I don't keep a lot of stuff, but these are, I choose moments of punctuation in life. And tattoos are a great way to do that.
I totally understand. I appreciate that very much. Well, that makes me want to ask a question about tattoos somehow. Three tattoos that you wouldn't ever get, but that would be really funny.
Oh,
three funny tattoos.
Three. Sure. Yeah. Oh man. I mean, people have it, but that little, the pube lawnmower guy, the little guy lawnmowering your pubes. I actually think that's really funny. you know, there's a Calvin and Hobbes strip where Calvin makes a snowman on a ridge. Like it's not quite a snowman. It's more like the top of a snow head and four little snow fingers.
Uh-huh.
It looks like kind of a giant pulling himself up. So I'd probably get that near the butt region, like the butt snowman, like appearing over your pant line.
Love it.
Or whatever. And I actually did at one point consider getting the army of ants tattoo where your whole foot's just ants and then the ants kind of crawl up your leg into little individual ants, which
ant
is
army.
Terrible. Who does that?
Yeah,
although
I don't
people
know,
did
but
that.
It's,
and it's also awesome. But yeah, it's like the B sharps. It's the kind of thing where you see it once, then it's less funny every time you see
that's
it.
That's right. That's exactly right. Well, you're going to have one of these immortalized on your fake MASH body, so this is going to be great. And then let's finish it out with three places that you have your second home, your vacation home.
Oh, our vacation home.
Anywhere in the world or in the world of fantasy.
In the world of fantasy.
In the world of fantasy.
Okay, well, okay, I want my fantasy home is like a viewing box of the throne in Westeros, but like nobody can come in or touch me.
Oh my, okay.
Because I want to play the Game of Thrones, but I don't want to die. Or I want to watch it being played. So a Westeros viewing box.
Got it.
We'll go with that in fantasy terms. And then the entire, I would, anywhere in Belize. I'd go anywhere in Belize.
Great.
Belize City's a little gritty, but you know, I'll live.
All right.
And then how about, one more fantastic. Let's just bait this. Let's see if I can. Let's live a little dangerous.
Yeah.
Sochi. One in Sochi.
Let's do it. God, I was reading about those hotels. It's.
Did you hear?
They all sound like jokes. It sounds like all
there's
pranks.
A building that's half done, so they just put a tarp over that building and then painted the tarp.
I mean,
the building. I just picture everybody getting to Sochi and somebody at the front of the lines getting there and being like, we're going to have to turn around and get a shitload of dimes. Like, poor Russians hoping that a toll booth will slow them down.
I know. It's really, the list of reports coming in is, it sounds made up. It sounds like there's no possible way that's a real thing. That's just someone pranking you. These people are pranking us, but they're not. It's totally real. Okay. Tell me. One, two, stop.
Stop.
Okay. One, two, three, four, five, six. All right. Pausing this. Calculating future. Undeniable. 100% guaranteed future.
This is happening.
Is on its way momentarily.
This is straight happening. Honey, we might be getting married.
That's right. We did it.
I'm so excited.
We did it.
What's my future?
Okay. First of all, always tough to decide where to start, but I want to tell you, you know what? I'm just going to rip the Band-Aid off for Kelly. Kelly, I'm sure that you have a very bright future with Caitlin, so I don't want you to worry about this. I feel like this person can fit in because this person is this person, you know, he's a bit of a, like a loose cannon himself. He's a bit of a wanderer. Sometimes he shows up for where he's supposed to be. Sometimes he doesn't show up. He marches the beat of his own drum. I feel like this is not a situation where he's going to get in the way of anything. He's just going to enhance, and that's Mr. Bill Murray.
Well, I mean, I think she'd be okay with that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, however it evolves. Maybe it just evolves that, like, you guys just hang out all the time and it's not even sexual. Who knows? But he's definitely in the picture. Very, very funny for me to imagine him being in the picture alongside your best friends, the Powerpuff Girls. Very nice dichotomy there. Really covering a lot of ground when you have both of those people in your life. Both of those sets of people.
There's literally nothing I can't do with that set of allies. I could save the world in every party. That's what I was trying to say.
You could save the world in every party. Also, if you ever need to switch over into your alter ego, Pam from Archer, you also have that going for you.
Yeah.
There's a lot
I'm really scoring
of good stuff
here.
Going
this
here.
Is,
a lot
man,
of good
I'm,
stuff going here.
Feels real good.
And I don't know who, if you're yourself or if you're Pam or if you've got Bill with you or Powerpuff Girls or what, but when you bicycle down the Verrucht water slide, that's going to be like an adventure to remember. I hope somebody films that.
My
I hope somebody
so
films
bright.
That. Because that's something you're going to look back fondly on and maybe even take a break from watching what's going on as you observe the throne of Westeros from your viewing box. But your viewing box is actually a mansion.
Can you imagine when Pam shows up in Westeros?
Nobody's going to know
Dude,
what to do.
Dude, Joffrey ain't going to know what hit
ain't
him.
Ain't nobody going to know what's
How
up.
How you going to keep him back in Westeros?
Oh, man. But like the fact that you're in a mansion, because you did again end up with a mansion.
Yeah,
it's like from any point in your mansion, you can, you know, check in and see what's going on there is pretty great. You also took time out from your busy schedule to write
Guns, Germs, and Steel.
Guns, Germs, and Steel.
Sweet.
I can only imagine that that's like a lot of the stuff that you've got going on. It's kind of like a bit, you're very busy processes, riding this bicycle down this, water slide, hanging
that
out.
That didn't
Powerpuff
take
Girls.
Riding
they
a
take
bike
a lot
on the
of
water
energy.
Slide. That was just, that
well,
took
maybe
about 4.7 seconds.
Maybe you rode it back up again.
Oh my God. That
Listen,
would take many
know.
Days.
We don't know. I just want you to know that you can rest assured that you have all of the healthy energy you need straight from your pasta carbonara. Whenever you need a kick in positive, healthy, 100% benefits to your health in every way, no ramifications,
so,
pasta,
I mean,
carbonara.
Carbonara as Pam with Bill Murray.
That's correct.
In Westeros.
That's correct.
While I'm penning a tome that explains the distribution of both wealth and essentially and like mineral and intellectual property.
That's
what I'm up to? That's my jam?
That's what you're up to.
Jeez.
And
while
finally,
I'm riding my bike down the Verrucht.
Perhaps your greatest accomplishment is your ant army tattoo.
Yeah! It's my ant army! That's my minions! They're all up on my feet! They're crawling on my legs!
Your ant army, the same person that did all of these things, was like, I should probably get
I
some ants
probably,
on my
You know
feet.
What I need?
Yeah.
Hey, Bill, how would you feel if I tattooed an ant army on my foot?
Super into it.
Super into
Everybody's on board. I'll tell you what, this has been a joy.
I want to thank you. You have a great podcast. It's so
Thanks,
cool.
Kayla.
I mean, it's just the best. Coolest ladies. People I'm bummed I didn't know about before I heard them on your podcast, but I'm really glad I knew about them afterwards.
You do.
So thank you very
That's
much.
That's the best compliment you could give me.
Well, I mean it. So thanks tons for having me. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. I look forward to seeing you in 50 more shows at Sketchfest
yes,
as we round out.
I only
out.
Have 72 more in
do
the
you
next
have, how
four
many,
days.
What do you have left this weekend? Are you,
I actually
you had
have
a
my
bunch
show,
all
business. I can't believe yes! I went for an hour and didn't talk about the business. I have a show called The Business that I do here in San Francisco every week, and there's one in New York, there's one coming back to LA, so we are
it's a great show. You guys put together a great show.
Yeah, it's we now have five regulars, so you see us every week, and then we have one or two guests, but I call it the Artisan Sausage Factory. It's where you go to see the good meat being made.
You know what it is? It's Five Guys Burgers.
It's Five Guys. It's
it's Five Guys Burgers of comedy.
That's there are no peanuts, but it is in every other way quite similar.
Yeah.
But it's a show I love, and it's the best thing I've ever been a part of, creatively or personally. It's just a terrific organization. But we've been a part of Sketchfest for a couple of years. We have a show coming up tomorrow.
And by
which
the way,
doesn't
this
matter.
Is, but it is coming out.
Oh,
this
it's
will
tonight.
Come out
oh, that's
late
right.
tonight.
That's awesome.
So this will come out on Thursday.
It's every Wednesday. And if you're in New York or LA, it's also you can also see us there. Also, I'm going to do on Sunday night, I will be at the Right Spot, the last night of the fest. I will
yeah!
do.
Yeah.
Some stand-up comedy at a cool little venue.
Closing night, y'all. Closing night. You still have time to get out to the festival. Thanks to everybody who has attended thus far.
Thanks to you, amazing,
for bringing great comedy.
Thanks to you for and, the festival.
It's should people be following you like on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter at RobotCaitlin.
At RobotCaitlin,
you can Instagram
guys.
Me at CaitlinIsTall because I am tall.
Jeez, guys. There's no denying it. Excellent.
CaitlinGill.com, even.
CaitlinGill.com.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you next time. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.